How's it going, ladies, gentlemen, NBC? Yes, fucking podcast. This is Eat Sleep Elite. We are off the fucking Zaz today. And Charlie's not even on anything, which is what should be concerning to everybody that listens to this show. This
Nah,
man
you
is
know, I, that's not
genuinely
true right
sane.
now. No, that's not true right now. I have a Mountain Dew that's not zero sugar, so I might be off the
This
fucking walls
man
here, buddy.
is cooked. He isn't drinking a sugared soda in.
Pineapple Berry Mountain Dew. Oh,
Dude, I really
280
don't think I've
calories
ever
to the
heard of you
brain.
drinking a non-sugar-free soda in my entire time of knowing you, and that's not that crazy to say. Because
It's so sweet, I think I'm gonna
you
put my
and
head
our
in the
other
wall.
friend, shout out Brady, who listens to the show every week, both of you guys have been on the non-sugar-free everything for a while, or I guess I should say the sugar-free kind of carbonated drinks for like years that I've known you. What the hell happened?
Going fucking crazy, man.
Well, fuck. This is what the. You know what? Fucking look at this. Is what you did, America. This is what this economy has done to this man. We had some really fun wrestling this week, Charlie.
That we
And
did.
honestly, that's kind of like why we're off the fucking Zaza right now, because like it's gonna be fun to talk about today. I mean, it's another one of those weeks where like we're a couple weeks out from a pay-per-view, but it doesn't really feel like it because we're just flowing so well. Like, it's kind of this all in through all out kind of period, as always feels like this. So we hit that big stride of AEW at the end of the, I guess just like the middle of the summer through the summer and into the fall, and carry that all the way through World's End usually. So we're on that. And honestly, Charlie, this is something I was thinking about while I was watching wrestling this week. I was like, dude, the booking this year has been so fucking good. And I remember toward the end of last year, people saying, oh my God, the booking kind of kicked up toward the end or whatever. And they do that usually most years, right? Like they hit a stride. I feel like we hit that stride in like January, dude. And I don't think we've ever stopped. And I think that's fucking insane. Like,
It's been really consistent. I mean, you know, shifting the focus back to the tag division and shifting more than just, you know, two women's storylines. I mean, arguably, say right now with the Toni Storm story, what's happening with her and Jamie Hayter, I don't think you went into this week saying it's all the same story. I don't think anyone was doing that. Yet now their fucking courses are becoming tied together and it's going to intersect at the pay-per-view. So, I mean, you know, I think it's just been a lot of consistency. It's Tuesday when we post these. We got the boys playing again tonight, the United States team,
Boys.
the men's national soccer team. No,
Football.
I'm kidding. So that's always fun before they all go back. Tony Khan had a big week at the transfer deadline here.
Not in the
He
NFL.
signed Kevin. He signed the Brazilian Kevin. So Kevin's
Kevin.
stocks are up. You know, Tony Khan has been posting a lot on social media lately about the Jags and Fulham. So it's always cool just to kind of see those
Kevin
worlds.
collection up $1. No.
Yeah, exactly. It's cool to see those worlds, you know, intersect. So, because look, he
My
knows
man has a
hockey.
Kevin Page or two in his binder.
He's got one of the best Americans in the world on his Fulham team. So that he knows ball. So,
Ball knower Tony Khan, you know?
yeah.
In other news, the fucking Colts. What?
Yeah, dude.
Miami
Indiana
in the
Jones.
mud. No, I mean, honestly, this is kind of my reaction as a Colts fan. Like, I'm like, great, awesome, obviously 1-0, not what we were expecting. We could win 8 games now, you know what I mean? It's possible, you know, but like, what the fuck is
So
happening in
cool. So
Miami?
cool.
What
Yeah.
is happening? Tua turned the ball over.
Exactly. Well, now that yeah, it's great to we I'm so glad sports are fucking fully back in
Oh,
swing.
I know.
One
We get to
more
yap
thing,
on it in here.
I know it's a wrestling show, but one more thing. The Bulls, my basketball team, signed Josh Giddey to a 4-year deal today. Oh my God, my boy. That's my new LaVine. Look, I don't make the rules.
So you get a New Jersey, finally?
Yeah, you gotta find a player, and you know, it was Derrick Rose and then Jimmy Butler, and then it's been Zach LaVine. Basically, since the year he joined, I was searching for sanctuary as someone to root for on my team, and it became Zach, and now we got Josh Giddey, Mr.
Yeah.
fucking buzzer beater himself.
I think
So
that guy for me this year, even though I'm obviously if I can, I mean, I would love to get a Michael Pittman jersey, obviously. Probably going to run me like $200, you know what I mean? Like, you know what I probably could get for a reasonable price? I might be able to get a Wrexham jersey for a semi-decent price. Or, yeah, like, maybe a Leverkusen jersey of Tillman or something like that. You know what I mean? Like,
Molly Tillman!
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's my guy this year, you know what I mean? Like, and but I wouldn't mind like a Pepe or something like that also.
Yeah,
you
know, exactly. Crazy,
like, just to, yeah. I think I want a soccer jersey as my next jersey straight up. Like, I don't know. I just really got into it this year. It's like my second favorite sport now, and I'm not even kidding. Like,
it's just so much fun.
Like, I love baseball, but I never get into baseball anymore. I don't know why. I just, probably because my team sucks, you know, like.
Beesbull. Well, here's the good news. I'm kicking us off this week with favorites. And we have...
Is that good news? Hey!
Yeah. Because we got an absolute banger of a match here. And look, we are jumping... I mean, it might sound like a broken record, because it's been a couple weeks in a row. One of us has chosen these matches. 4 weeks in a row, to be honest. We're on a streak of these matches. But they're just so fucking good.
They're the best matches on both cards.
They're the best matches. Like. And it's just the most fun. So that's why it gets the favorite. But we're jumping to the main event of Dynamite, where the Don Callis family, Kyle Fletcher and Josh Alexander, plus the Young Bucks, versus Hangman, Adam Page, Kenny Omega, and Jet Speed. Okay, first off, you want to talk? There's no weak link ever in these matches. That's why it's so impressive that you get these party matches. It's a different it's a different combo every time. Sometimes it feels the same, yet the match is different every time. Matt and Nick, the brilliance of this entrance this time. So they got the music. They're back to getting their music, but they had to do a meet and greet for $20 a photo. And when they ran out of photos, the meet and greet was free. they're fully embracing it. They're back to uploading on BTE. It's not long stuff. It's only like 6 minute things, but it always plays into their entrance on Dynamite. So that's fun. I thought this match was unbelievable. You know, we're wondering of the Don Callis family who's going to be the one to face Hangman. It might just be Kyle, the one that goes for it at the pay per view. Of course, we know
certainly
he's facing
that's the
him
one
this
they
week,
framed
but
it this week for sure.
Yeah,
it was going to be Kyle
as he took Kenny out old Yeller style. I mean, Kenny's dead.
Him back, shot him in the head.
Yep, Kenny's gone. And he confirmed himself. He's got some tests and stuff. So he's, you know, this was done on purpose, of course.
Look, he's been wrestling at full speed since he came back. It was inevitable. I'm sorry. I love Kenny. Yeah. His body can only take so much. You know what I mean? Like, so
no,
you
Kenny,
know, like,
Kenny can't be a fucking 52 week, you know, wrestler. It's just not going to happen.
Brian had to start doing this too after.
We're
his
way
last
past
major
that
injury,
part of his career.
Remember, like, Brian's last year was like, he was basically having to take a couple weeks off after every match. You know what I mean? So, like, it's like, it's inevitably going to happen with Kenny. He's been wrestling this style for literally three decades, probably. So, like, you know, like.
No, literally. And look, there's a lot of Canada in this match. And when they got going with each other, it was always great. So, Josh Alexander and Mike Bailey specifically, I thought they had really, really good one on ones. Of course, when you have Omega and Page and you have the Young Bucks and you finally get the chance to kind of have like 4 to 5 minutes together and just kind of, it's not really run back the big hits because it's, you know, their match. Well, their match is still one of the best tag matches in AEW history. You know, you could just see it in that 5 minutes. It's the chemistry they have together in the ring. I mean, it's untouchable. It was the foundation of this company and you can see why. I mean, it was just so fucking nice to see them together. Man, that buckshot lariat into the V-trigger, like, dude, those combos together are just so fucking beautiful. But...
Like, we'd have the best tag division in the world, and Kenny and Hangman get back together for one match, and you're like, oh, yeah, right, I forgot those are actually the two best tag wrestlers in the company.
One of the smartest decisions, and if we had our show in 2019, we would have been saying it at the time, because they didn't want to put those guys straight to the title, right? So they made them the tag. One of the smartest decisions they did was letting them just run with it. And as so many different stories that it went through, and it is earned 5 years later for them to be reunited in this moment. Completely different, especially Hangman. I mean, the trials and tribulations this guy's gone through since being, you know,
the Hangman Adam Page AEW career playlist when he retires is gonna fucking go off. Like,
he's the kind of guy that could have one of those documentaries when it's all said and done, just following his story. Because, you know, full-time school teacher, and he's an ROH six-man tag champion. Like, he might have been part-time teacher, but still, it really doesn't matter anymore.
But could AEW revive? Remember those old WWE DVDs they used to do about all the wrestlers, like where we'd actually tell their backstory and stuff? Like, I remember the one that always stuck with me was the Hardys, because I mean, it showed how hard it was.
Look, you could easily do something with Max. HBO Max now, my bad.
100%. Well, you could do something with Max with that too, you know?
You could easily do something with that. Yeah, we saw it with the Cody show on TBS, and they tried it again with the Adam Cole show.
To hear Hangman tell his story, because like he's definitely so a guy cool. with a but, huge chip on his shoulder to this day, and I'm curious where that comes from. You know what I mean? Like,
but no, I mean this was so good. And look, Kyle Fletcher pinned Kevin Knight for the victory, so another victory for Josh Alexander and the Don Callis family. So
Bishop
good
takes
win
Knight.
Good win streak for Yosh. We like to see that. But I just thought
Yosh out of the mud.
Everyone brought unbelievable athletic ability to the match. And look, this could have just been the Bucks versus Omega and Page, but they want to get those other guys involved too. Three of our signings from this year involved in this, and Kyle Fletcher. So they're literally looking at this as three of the newest members of the company, plus someone who they're hoping is the future, I mean, genuinely face of the company at this. You got to be shooting for the stars with someone like Kyle Fletcher. So I just,
stars.
This feels like something that was purposely done to really put over the Don Callis family again. And I loved it. I'm really liking this faction. Post-match, as the Bucks are brawling with Jet Speed to the back. So I also like that the Bucks weren't in on the beat down here. Because again, you always want to, you can't cross that line. I mean, I guess you can, because Hangman and Swerve did, but they're not buddy-buddy. I don't think they'll ever be buddy-buddy. But you can't have the Bucks cross that line with Omega and Paige again. Because I think you're now teeing that up for the eventual return of the whole group. So I don't think you're going to see them fuck with them too much. But so they get to the back on purpose. Again, so I'm pointing that out. Rocky and Lance join. They start getting into the beat down. They set up a chair in the middle of the ring. Fletcher hits Adam with a brainbuster through it. Omega covers up Adam. Similar to Eddie Kingston covering up John Moxley is kind of the vibe it got. 69 him, Don. 69 me, Don. You know, that's the vibe I got when Kenny was doing that. But, you know, and Rocky Romero and Archer set up a table. Omega's trying to fight him off. Fletcher gets him in the ribs with a broken chair. He drags him to the apron, hits a brainbuster through the table, and Don Callis is laughing fucking sadistically. Fletcher's back is bleeding. Doctors are tending to Omega, and the show goes off air with Don Callis family standing tall. So, if anyone's wondering, yes, the Don Callis family is the top faction now. That's what they're going to try and build them as. They are the big dogs now. So they're going to be our big heels. Let the Death Riders kind of do their own thing, not at the top of the card anymore. So now these guys are being positioned as the top of the card faction. So
I say this too.
It's a new era.
I don't think the Death Riders are losing any steam by moving down the card either.
No, they're not at all.
They're doing,
but I think this was very acknowledging.
It's kind of intriguing, but now we can do this with the Don Callis family. So we have to give credit for two things here. A, that we built up this Death Rider thing enough that it can stand on its own, so that, because a lot of people didn't have a lot of faith in it for a long time, you know? So,
it's arguably doing better now that they're not holding the title.
No, 100%. I would definitely agree with that. So that's a positive right there. And then the second positive is that you managed to, in the background, build up this Don Callis family to be a legitimate threat and then be able to transition straight into that top role as the heel faction. So it's like, you have got to give credit to Tony Khan for that. Like, I already gave him credit for the booking for the whole year already to this point earlier, but like, I just, you know, you got to point stuff like that out because it's significant.
What do you think of the match?
Yeah, I mean,
and I guess the post angle, this is the dynamite post angle, so
yeah, 100%. It cooked. Alexander, I thought, like I said, was used super well here. I thought Adam Page was firing on all cylinders. Kyle, just a generational young gun in there, just firing off, you know. Jet speed, just still ridiculously good. Never look out of place against any of these top tier, top like five talent in the world, you know. Like, Hangman hit this, like, I at the time, and this time I'll tell you how much it hit me. I wrote in my notes the diabolical hot tag. He didn't get the hot tag in this match. It seemed like he was being set up for it, but they cut his ass off and said, no, you're going down, son, you know. So, this was, like you mentioned, like the ultimate Hardy match, and like there was a spot where they hit like a TK driver into the ring, then a TK driver out of the ring, and then there was TK drivers all over the place. It just kept going. The hits kept coming, you know, and it's got to be one of the best, if not the best, Dynamite match of the year. I mean, it's probably in that conversation. Kyle picking up the one with the sheer drop brainbuster is huge. And then the post match assault. Kenny was murdered and Hangman got wounded, you know, they tried to break man's neck. Yeah, I mean, it's just an insane match and an insane, you know, kind of like, and it's crazy to me, like, that, like, we like go off the air and it's just like, it's I feel like it's significant. I don't know why. Like, what timing? We went off air, like, I was just going to say, I feel like it's significant every time the heels stand tall and we go off air on that, because it's not something that happens in wrestling always.
No.
So, you know, I just feel like I just acknowledge that, because like it really does make the Don Callis family feel like the top faction when you do that. Honestly, it's a really good way to put it. So,
yeah, it does. So, yeah, that was a fun closer to Dynamite this week. But, Duke, what was your favorite this week? Esquire?
Ah, boy, indeed. Yes, so we have the other All-Star match, All-Star tag match, the 8-woman tag, and this was the Triangle of Magnus and Megan Bain taking on Toni Storm, Mina Shirakawa, and Chris... wait. Hold on. I can't read, because that's four, yeah, and Harley Cameron. I was like, why does it feel like that's five people? But it's because Harley Cameron might as well be worth two, because she's that damn good. But anyway.
True.
Nah, Chris Statlander is just two women smushed into one, and that's why she's so goddamn... anyway, you know...
Badass.
Yeah, I'd let her be me. I don't think I'd have to let her. I think she just could anyway. I mean, I feel like everybody in this match has pretty much found a permanent slot on TV, which I think is insane. I mean, I feel like this match is another just further fuel to the argument for women's tag or trio styles. I feel like at first we were like against it. Is we were like, no, you don't have the women for it. They have these matches are proving it. They have enough women. Do they have enough to have like a sustainable division? No, that just means you're gonna have to sign more to the roster. That's just the reality, you know. Like, because I mean, if you're gonna do a division, you're gonna have to do it, you know. And like, I feel like Collision has this really phenomenal history of tag team wrestling. No exception here. This one fills that role. It doesn't have any like real frills to it. It's just a really solid match. And Toni got a really big top when she tagged in. Mina was this really nice dive to the outside. I feel like I underrate her high flying, because she does everything else so well, but like, she'll just hit a dive in the middle of the match. And I'm like, God, this is why she's so over in Japan, because she doesn't do that all the time. Maybe she does in Japan. And maybe it's because in places like AEW in Japan, like, that's just so much more common. But when I see her do it just randomly in the middle of a tag match like that, I'm like, you know what? That was like so perfectly placed. She must do that all the time, you know? So like, anyway, when something's put well, I have to acknowledge it. And once it got off the rails too, it just started going nuts. Like, they just started hitting every move under the book. Significance here at the end, Stat ends up locking in the seatbelt. I forget who she does it on, but she locks in the seatbelt. Maybe it was on Julia. That sounds right. And picks up the win via Wheeler's, I guess, finishing move, ? I don't know, whatever. You know, and so that obviously is significant. Before this match, somewhere earlier in the show, Wheeler approached her basically saying, hey, you're in the Death Riders. We're not calling you a Death Rider, but we'll have your back, you know, like, so she's a Death Rider at this point, and this basically confirms it. And after the match, I'm not sure who kicks it off. I'm not sure if it's Stat still beating down on Julia that starts this off, but something kicks off a brawl. I think that might be it,
yeah.
Right?
I think that's it. Yeah.
Because she's trying to be all heelish, and she starts beating her up. So then they all attack, and obviously babyfaces come to the defense. They get beat down, and we have Jamie fucking Ada arrive. Yeah. So then Tony Storm crashes out in the ring after all this insanity and violence and says, let's get bloody ballistic. I want you. I want you. And I want you in a fatal four-way. So yeah, that's going to
check out with Tony. That checks out.
So Jamie Hayter, Tekla, and Chris Statlander versus Tony Storm for the AEW Women's World Championship. And I have never been more sure that we're getting a new champion, Charlie. I think it's happening.
It's time. It's definitely time.
I'm going to go bold, too, and say I think it might be fucking Tekla, too. I think they might pull that fucking trigger, dude.
Yeah. Pulled the trigger with Mariah May. You know, they've done this before with Hikaru Shida. So, yeah. They've done this before. Just don't sit on it and just jump. Could have been Megan Bain this year, but didn't happen.
In truth, it's probably going to be Jamie Hayter, right? If we're being honest. But if it was fucking Tekla, could you imagine? Oh, my God.
It might be Stat.
Yeah, maybe Stat has been on a really good run the last couple of years, and we really have been waiting. She had that TBS
biggest names that hasn't touched the title.
We liked her TBS title, and we even thought that it went well going straight into Willows, you know what I mean?
Yep.
I was just kind of like, okay, what are we doing with Stat next? She feels like she should go to the world title. Got a couple shots. Wasn't ever the right time. Maybe it is her time. You know, honestly, what's great about this match, other than Tony retaining, and I don't even think that's a bad thing, by the way. I think that's just the, like, probably most predictable thing you could do in this Fatal 4-Way because she's won so many of them, you know, these crazy matches. But I don't think there's a bad result to this match. So I think that on paper, if your match doesn't have a bad result to it, then it's probably a good match to book, right?
Yeah. And look, she's held this title since what? Fucking February 15th.
It feels like she's the only one that's held the title in about the last 3 years, but yeah.
Yeah. So, multiple 200-plus day reigns. Yeah, I think it's perfectly time, and doing it the four-way seems to be a, you know, it happens.
By the way, and that's not a criticism. I do think it is time. I think Toni Storm has defined this championship for the last, like, 3 years in AEW, and that was because she stepped up at a time when there wasn't really anybody in the division to define what it was, you know, and yeah, I think, yeah, honestly,
this is just like, she's what she does for the division is what Moxley does. It's the same thing. Whether the aces.
Yeah, I mean, a reliable hand that you know can get it done. You can put any opponent against them and they're going to make either that opponent better, like, or look better, or they're going to at least, it's going to do something for you as a company. So
I loved seeing Tekla versus Mina in this. I thought they had some really good stuff together. And yeah, Stat versus Julia is really good. But also, I mean, is Stat and the Death Riders angle going to be something that comes into play? It's worth keeping a note, you know?
Death Riders do like to cheat, and they do want a championship back in the Death Riders, so that would be something that they would definitely be willing to do. But it definitely adds a little bit of intrigue to the Chris Statland things.
I'll tell you what, Wheeler hits a fucking super kick or something on Tony Storm at that pay-per-view, you're going to hit a massive reaction.
Dude, he is already so over as a heel. How much more can we get him in? How much more meat?
Well, let's continue the talk with the women's division here, and let's jump into the news. Mina Shirakawa is heading to Mexico next month to compete in the CMLL Women's Grand Prix. So
she fucking might win that, honestly.
Yeah, she's joining there. So,
anybody
the men's
AEW
happened
AEW
her, last
I'm
week with
that we don't have anybody in that tournament, dude. To be honest with you.
Yeah, I do know the men's took place last week and Místico was crowned the champion. So, but Mina is headed there.
We got to get Místico on one of those Hechicero deals.
Imagine that'd be cool. All right. Let's see. Well, so a little bit of Britt Baker stuff. Might as well. So DDP wrote, people are trying to wonder what's going on with Britt Baker, of course, you know, since there's nothing concurrent, you know, what's happening with her. So DDP, he said, yo, Tony, when are you bringing back Britt Baker? Rumor has it she's been staying in peak physical condition, is ready to make her return. She's ready and so are the fans. And then he's posted, you know, catch up with his gauntlet from last summer. And I want to mention this because this was quoted or Meltzer talked about it on his show. And he said, look, whatever the Britt Baker deal really is, if she's not on the show, I'd think she'd never be back. Plus, with injuries to both Jamie Hayter and Thunder Rosa, it's not like the spots haven't opened up on the women's side. So that was
that's true, of course. Honestly, there's like four women that are really being focused on right now. There's definitely a slot for a couple more to be in there. And we're in Philly right now in a residency, and she's from Pittsburgh. It's not ideal.
So the big thing here is there is a Pittsburgh Dynamite coming up. So
I'm not saying that Philly and Pittsburgh, by the way, are like friends or anything, but like it's still the same state. You know what I mean? Like you'd think you'd want her on those shows, right? Like she's still going to be over in that crowd, I would think, unless Philly fans are just built different, I guess. But
either way, I mean, if she's not at the Pittsburgh show September 24th, you'd got to think.
How long does her contract have left on it? Because it feels like because we haven't heard anything and we haven't seen anything, and it's me would assume it's probably like a couple years left on it, right? Like.
Hell, I wouldn't even have a guess.
I mean, all these contracts are bullshit anyway. They're at will. Exactly. The contractor can just decide you're not with them anymore. You know, that's generally how
in this works. In the fall of 2021, she signed a 5-year deal. That's all we know.
So that would be next year would be when that's up. So
yeah.
She would be at least sitting on the roster probably for at least another year. And assuming injury time, because she was injured, you know, they'd want to recoup that money. It's probably not till like mid-2026 that we'll see her gone if we do. So... But even with that said, even if she misses this Pittsburgh show, it's not over because they still have like a year. So like, you know,
I mean, yeah,
like,
you got time to figure it out. So, yeah, I mean, we're going since December 7th when she said the nobody cares thing is the last time
it goes like this. We don't hear anything from any party, and then we hear shit like this, and it's clear that that's on her behalf. I'm sorry, like I don't care what anybody tries to tell me. That was posted by DDP because they had a conversation and he was upset about it. You know, like, and
must have been.
And it's like, yeah, I get it, EDP. You probably understand what it's like to be really good and not be used, right? You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of his whole story in the WWE, right? Like, he's considered a legend to the WWE, but he did like a year there, and it wasn't that good by a lot of people's under, you know, what they think. You know what I mean? Like, so it's like, that's not me knocking EDP. That's just saying that's he understands what it's like to not be used to your potential as a good talent. So I can understand why he feels a certain type of way, but at the same time. It always feels so icky whenever stuff like this comes out from, especially from a secondary person who's not the person. And it's like the only thing we've heard in the last year about Britt Baker has been this and that she's not happy, basically, you know? So it's like, fine, I guess the stuff with Adam Cole, but who the fuck cares about that drama bullshit, you know? I don't know. It's just a sad state of affairs. Cause I used to love watching Britt Baker, man. Like,
yeah. So. Yeah, we just got to see what happens. I mean, it's honestly, and I wanted to bring it up because this September show is coming up. So, I mean, you got to assume.
That is a big signal. She's not there.
If they're back in good graces, we will probably see her in 2 weeks. If not, well, you know what that might mean. So, might be a while. Let's see. What else do we have? I don't need to talk about too much shit today. We know Bryan Danielson is going to be on commentary starting this week, full-time basis, on Dynamite. And basically, Tony Khan was on the Battleground podcast. He said, as we're preparing for Forbidden Door, I thought Bryan would be fantastic on commentary. And knowing his background, knowing his insights, and how prepared he is, how much research he does on pro wrestling worldwide. So, basically going into, look, he thinks Danielson's great. And he's brings in, you know,
some intelligence. Samoa Joe as our commentary duo on Collision one day.
I think so. So yeah, look, it's great, and you know, I guess we just have to wait till tomorrow or today, whenever
Danielson and Joe are calling fucking Speedball Mike Bailey versus Kevin Knight for the TNT Championship when they finally broken up as a team and decided they hated each other.
Yeah, so. I guess let's see what this means for other people on Dynamite, but my guess right now is that it would be a 3-man team of Excalibur, Taz, and Danielson. So, I don't know what that means for Shivani, but
pretty good.
I don't think they're going to have 4 people, and I don't think Taz is getting out. So... Yeah,
I mean, I guess it really depends. Like, is Taz like at that point where he wants to retire, right? Because even though we all love Taz, does Taz love doing this anymore? Does he love traveling all the time? You know, I'm sure he does, right? But like, if he ever gets to that point though, where he's like, well, would I want to be like, you know, just Hook's manager, or would I just want to watch Hook from afar, or you know, because He had, like, we always talk about this. He had a rough career. Every couple of years, he has to get surgery and stuff like that on, like, his knees or whatever, because he was a rough in-ring style. He was that ECW guy, you know? And so, you know, it would not surprise me if at some point, you know, Taz was like, hey, I don't want to, but I just, my health is kind of, you know, declining a little bit. I need to, like, work on myself all the time to be able to be in good shape anymore, you know? So, but he's also, like, one of the toughest guys in the history of the business, so I don't expect to see him going anywhere anytime soon. So, you know, like...
Yeah, I mean, it all. I can't imagine Taz is done yet, but I do
Let's
think
see how old,
like,
Taz is, because I think he's probably
57.
Yeah, so he's older than I think.
I mean,
but
we got about
he looks
three.
Really good for his age, and obviously he's been in super good shape for despite, you know, the health issues, you know, knees and stuff. Like, he's probably still in pretty good shape. That's probably why he's break now, because he's probably still trying to keep in good shape. You know, like,
yeah. So I think we'll just have to. But that's my guess. Is maybe Shivani's just moving to. You know, he'll do his interview.
I mean, he's
stuff
already got the lead spot on Collision for now. I think Shivani would be perfectly fine with just being the lead commentary on Collision. I don't think he would, because he already gets all those spots where he's the interviewer and stuff. So, like, yeah, he'll 100%. By the way, have you noticed that? Other than backstage, Tony does all the in-ring interviews pretty much right now, which Renee has done a couple recently, but it's pretty much all Tony. And I think that having that consistent face on, and that's why I've always argued that should be Shivani's, like, main role, should be those in-ring interviews and sometimes backstage interviews, but mostly in-ring interviews. Because putting that at, I don't know what it is, man. Can you explain it? When you have that same person doing that all the time, it makes it feel a little more legit. I don't know why. It just does. I have no idea.
Yeah. It just adds something. It's the consistency.
Even like Marvez being the one that constantly interviews the Bucks and Kenny. You know what I mean? Like, it feels like interest. I don't know. I like it. I don't know. I'm a simple wrestling fan. I see man with microphone and I go, ah!
Exactly. Well, last little bit of news today, and fuck, could it have been worse? Wardlow has reportedly torn his pec.
No. You know what, though? You know what fucking happened when John Cena tore his pec? He won the fucking world title!
Pain.
No, Wardlow... We don't have a Royal Rumble here. He's coming back in the Casino Gauntlet next year, and he's winning the world title.
This just sucks. I mean, he came back after the what? I mean,
this felt like the spot Hobbs was in for forever, right? Like, he would always
17-month absence.
Right after, he would get hurt, and it would just kill all momentum he had. I hope they just table the Don Callis family angle with him. Like, they somehow keep the Don Callis family alive for long enough for him to be able to do something when he comes back, because this was too good. I really don't want this one to be thrown away, because what will there be for Wardlow if they do? Like, you know, like.
Yeah. I genuinely just sad. This just sucks. We're so excited. If you
We're literally a Wardlow podcast here, man. Like, this is like.
You're so excited when he returned. And, yeah. I mean, because there's nothing you can do now. I mean, this is just got to kind of hope it. He's doing, you know, he can get it healed fast
to
get back in.
Like, is somebody like Josh now? Like, is that what you have to do? Like,
I don't know. Wardlow brings something that no one else in that group has. That's the problem. So, honestly, it felt like he was kind of there to replace, you know, the hole that was there from Brian Cage, which was there from another injury. Just sucks. So, yeah. Hope Wardlow, you know, hope he does all right, because that's got to suck. I can only imagine, you know, how many scenarios and how many things they've talked to him about with joining this group on his return, talking about his return, and he's not going to wrestle a match. I don't even know. There's no information on how he tore the pec either. I mean, this could have been a freak injury. He could have been wiping his ass. It
could have been something that happened while he was doing American Gladiators, because, I mean, that show's insane. So, like, and he just didn't know. And then he, you know, he went to do something physically for, like, a segment, and they realized, or maybe just when he was working out, you know, like, it's possible. I mean,
that's how Cody tore it, was working out.
You could easily have done it working out. So, you know, like, it's 100%, you know, so, I mean, hey.
Yeah, hey, man, a perfect world, maybe he returns and fucking saves Kyle Fletcher.
Please don't try to do the Cody thing. I love you, Wardlow, but Cody's built different. Cody's an insane man. I don't know that Cody's perfectly okay after that. Like, you don't need to put yourself through that. Like,
Yeah. So, yeah. That being said, Duke, I guess let's go through our shows today, and I guess it's safe to say it'll be a little bit more of a truncated version this week.
I'm running a little tight on time here, so you know.
So yeah, we'll probably try and get these a little quicker than usual. But that's why we spend some time talking about our favorites and more. But so yeah, guys, we're just going to be a little quicker on the weekly week show. But this is week two of three. My bad from last week. I thought it was a 2 week stay, a 3 week stay in the 2300 Arena. Duke, take it away from week two Dynamite.
Yes, I put this in my notes as Dynamite Philly special. Sorry, Brady. Anyway, but yeah, so yeah,
damn.
Yeah, and we opened up the show with a madman, you know, Gabe Kidd arrived and said, we're all on his time. And where the fuck's Darby? Where is this Darby bitch at? I want him. He arrives. He says, he said my name. I shall appear. I must be Joe Henry. No. He arrived and Gabe basically said El Bozo and sent him to the Shadow Realm, you know? At this point in the night, I purchased the Kiefer Moore card. I wrote that in my notes for everybody on the show. Kiefer Moore was the
Kiefer Moore. Da 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 da. Kiefer Moore.
Bilal was also involved in this brawl. Hook arrived to do an assist. And then the Ops also showed up, which kind of like cooled Hook off a little bit. He was like, "Whoa, what the fuck, man!" You know, like. And they opened it up. It's basically opening things up with a giant brawl. Gabe Kidd was the Darby Allin attempted to murder Gabe Kidd after he attempted to murder him with a hammer or something like that. The Darby used chemical warfare. That's the only way I can describe it on Gabe Kidd, and then dragged him away in a body bag behind a truck. And I must say, Charlie, we never heard what happened to Gabe Kidd after this point. Is the AEW canon that Gabe Kidd got dragged behind a truck and killed in Philadelphia?
Yes.
We can't ever see him again. We can never see him again.
It's brilliant.
What a great way to write a guy off TV.
It's so good.
Brilliant. And when he comes back, you just have to show him rising from a body bag. Like, oh, fucking great stuff. We had a rundown of the show, and they mentioned here for the first time AEW being available for purchase on HBO Max for the pay-per-view. So W's, I guess, if it's something you were like really, you know, fiending for. I mean, obviously it's a good thing. I wonder if that means they'll be available like instantly because of the purchase ability, like if they'll have like a DVOD up like right after the show ends or something, you know, like because I don't actually know. You'd think if you're paying for it, because realistically, right, usually what happens with pay-per-views on television is they'll run them for like a while after, usually, Charlie, right, after a pay-per-view runs, and they'll just be available for purchase still on cable or whatever, right? So I wonder if it's going to be a situation like that with Max, where like you'll have the old pay-per-views like maybe a month, 2 months after, maybe 3 months. That was the thing I think they originally discussed, right, a couple month window where you'd still have to purchase the thing on whatever they're old providers were for that, but obviously now we're not doing that. So will there be that period? Will they want there to be a period where people are still paying for it, like the old window of sort of, I guess, profit from that you would have from pay-per-view even after the show had aired? I don't know. We flash back to last Wednesday where Alex Winza and Mercedes Monet were cutting promos on each other. It was good stuff. And we then go into the TBS Championship match between Mercedes Moné and Alex Wins. And fucking all of Mercedes' belts, just like all on the top rope, was just fucking aura. I mean, Jesus Christ. Very scrappy match here. They did some really well-wrestled technical stuff here. The thing about Alex Windsor is like, you know, I think when she originally came on, like, it was just kind of like, oh, this is kind of an opportunity to use her. You know, we haven't really done it yet, and Will's off TV for a bit, so, you know, we'll get her on TV for a bit while Will's on his little break. And then, like, I feel like she has to stick around as a mainstay in this division with how well she's gotten herself over with the crowd. We've all gotten a taste now, and it's like, no, we like this flavor. Let's keep adding that flavor to the menu. Like, we want this more, you know, like, and I think, I don't know, I just think that's cool. Like, the women's division really hasn't missed this year. Pretty much everybody they've introduced has gotten over in some way or fashion, and that's not even something the men's division can 100% say. Like, look at Anthony. I mean, Bowens is over, but it's like, it's no one, they're not doing it right. And it's clear, you know what I mean? So it's like, not everything has hit there. And I think everything that they've tried to do in the women's division this year so far has worked. And I feel like, I don't know, the women are kind of winning this year. If anyone was winning, you know, like, I don't know. It's kind of crazy. Oh,
this match kicked ass. This was a good match.
Yeah, and I think the other thing I was going to mention here was she doesn't look out of place against the top main event talent in the company, and that is Mercedes Moné 280. She is the top women's wrestler in this company. I know Toni Storm is on top right now, but I'm sorry, Mercedes Moné is by far the best women's wrestler in this company, you know? And it might be 1A and 1B, but, like, 1A is definitely Mercedes, you know what I mean? So, like, I mean, they had some excellent transition to submissions. They were selling like crazy in this one. Alex wanted a handshake after the match. He denied it with a middle finger. Alex said, "Fuck, hey, what the fuck? In my town, that's fucking fighting words, bitch." And then kind of got beat down a little bit. And then as she was getting her ass kicked and, you know, locked in a submission, fucking Riho came back, Charlie.
Yes.
Not out of that on my business card, on my bingo card. So yeah, Riho, a random Riho return of the year finally got in, you know. And hey, probably going to be a great match. And she could win the TBS championship. Riho is the Reign Breaker. She has been known to come in and end these diabolical women's title reigns. So, hey, it could happen here too. Yeah, your thoughts on Riho being back the match as a whole, and do you think Riho's going to win the title off of Mercedes?
Very awesome to see Riho back. I thought the match itself really fucking good. And, you know, just to further emphasize the Mercedes thing, I think when it's all said and done, right, when she retires and, you know, 5-10 years, whenever she retires and everyone finally, you know, gets their panties out of a bunch and however the fuck they view her, I think everyone will realize, oh yeah, she's the best North American women's wrestler ever. Like, it's pretty simple. I mean,
she's going to go down possibly as one of the top five North American wrestlers of this generation of wrestlers. I'm sorry, yeah, people don't see it that way. She's the top woman. And if anybody has any dispute for it, look at the title she's holding right now. Like,
I mean, she's checked every single box you could ever imagine. She was the one in NXT, right? It was her match with Bayley that did this whole revolution, however you want to talk about it, right? And it's always been her. And she's the one. And now she's done it in outside of WWE as well, which further proves everything we're saying. So it's.
I think eventually that every single women's wrestler in the world that's considered the top wrestler in their company wants to face this girl, and they're willing to put her over. You know, like, mm-hmm. It's not her coming in and saying, "I'm going to win all these matches." If that's really how it is, why would any of these companies let her come in? Because they probably have plans. Yes, they can make short-term money off of her, but I don't think she's making all of these dates all the time. Like, I assume there's some times where she's not going to be able to defend these titles just because there's like fucking 8 of them, and there's only 7 days in a week. You know, like.
Yeah. And that's why I always clarify when I say North American, because I genuinely think when you look at that, you know, history, look at the leaderboard, if you want to call it that, when it's all done, you'd be like, yeah, she was the best. And as of right now, she is the best. So enjoy the moment, because getting matches like this, it kicks ass. She is in full stride, if you will, in every bit of this character. She is crushing it every step of the way.
Taking her back, maybe one of the WWE's generational fumbles of a century. Like, it could end up going that way. Even if she ends up going back, because I think she's doing her best work of her career right now, and I think that's not that crazy to say, you know. So,
it's an evolution of her character. It's
absolutely so. All right. The ops are backstage. They say they still have Hook's back because he arrived here. He's like, yeah. What the fuck? They're like, what the fuck was they? They were like, what's the deal with Hook? And he's like, well, you know. Like, all right, look, kid, you're still an op, but we got a new tag partner, so you're on your own. But we're still going to have your back. Hook's not really happy about that, but he'll take it. So I guess Hook's still an op. I mean, fair. And that's also kind of cool, because that means if he does do something in singles, they'll theoretically have his back. So, you know, thoughts? I mean, it's just, you know, they just, I guess they finally answered the question, Charlie, because we've been wondering since Hook was on the way back. Is he still a member of the ops? I guess the answer is yes. So,
yeah, fucking down.
We have a mention of Taz in the 2300 Hall of Fame. He raised the banner for the brother. Mark Briscoe I think this might have been backstage, possibly, or in some kind of segment. I don't remember. Responding to Don Callis's request. Oh, no, sorry. He came out to the ring here. My bad. Mark Briscoe comes down to the ring and says Don Callis basically, you know, he's like, fine, you know, like, I think it's bullshit, but, like, you know, fine, I'll earn the match. Who am I facing, Don? I'm sick of this bullshit. Why did you make me wait a week, you know? And it's an old school style of promo that we don't really see a lot of guys implement anymore, I feel like. I feel like maybe Hangman does it sometimes. Definitely MJF does it. But, like, when I think about, Cope is the one that really does it in the company right now. The way he talks to the crowd, it's like he's having a conversation with you. You know what I mean? And I think that is, like, to me, that has always been the best form of wrestler to crowd promo when there's not any, you know, person for them to be talking to. That is the best version of that, in my opinion. And there's different ways of doing it. Obviously, that's not really the way people do it so much anymore. Sometimes they'll just say whatever's on their mind, and it works, and it's what it is. But this, to me, felt so much more personal and involved with the crowd. He was just talking to us, you know what I mean? And I don't know. I feel like there's something so subtle about that that people just don't understand. I feel like there's this thought that every promo needs to be like a soliloquy on fucking, like, the futility of life and death, you know what I mean? Like, and not everything needs to be that. No offense, John Moxley. I love it, you know what I mean? But, like, not everything needs to be that. You can have these sort of subtle promos where and I think those are my favorite John Moxley promos too. Like his one where he first came back, or the one where he talks about one, you know, needing to be a legend or whatever, you know, like, those are, to me, I think, the most impactful promos. And I thought I just would give Mark Briscoe his credit here, because I thought he really did a good job of talking to the crowd here. Said, send it, bald man on the block. I love also, and I got to give credit to Don here. I'm giving a lot of promo credit here, and I know I'm supposed to be going through this faster, but I have to give credit where it's due. Don Callis used Mark Briscoe's name like it was a fucking slur here, dude. I swear to God, Mark, are you kidding me, dude? That is stuff you cannot teach, you know, like.
Good shit.
Mark ends up having to face Lance Archer. He picks up a win over him with a froggy bow. Great match. Great fucking segment. Got to give credit where it's due. Phenomenal stuff there. Tony Storm was backstage, addressed the freaks, and, you know, basically forecasted that she was going to do this four-way thing. She just didn't know who it was going to be yet. Played Harley Cameron to Chris Statlander backstage. They took off Harley's goofy-looking mask, and this is when the point in the show where I mentioned where they're confronted with and allied with by Wheeler Yuta and the Death Riders. Okay, Wheeler Yuta and the Cloud Castagnoli took on Brodito. I guess I could have said Bandito and Brody King. And Brodiferous the 14th. For the AW World Tag Team Championships. Instantly had some fuck you Yuta chance. We had some meat mash. Bandito was doing Bandito things. I mean, tag matches this year are just lit. They've been really doing a good job of rebuilding this tag division, and Bandito and Brody are two big, huge parts of that. And I maintain my position that the Death Riders fuck on the chase. When they're on the chase, they fuck. And this is proof of it right here, because Wheeler and Claudia were so desperate to win these things, you know, like, they were almost there. They were going to do their shenanigans, but Moxley got in and Darby got in to involve themselves so they could not cheese. And they end up picking up the retain here. And yeah, so solid stuff there. And, I mean, any brief thoughts on that, Charlie? I mean, it's, you know, solid stuff. But I do agree with my statement that the Death Riders on the chase, they do indeed fuck.
Oh, yeah. It's working very, very well for me. And I'm really enjoying it. I thought it added to a really solid Dynamite, and look, these champions are gonna fucking wrestle, and I'm loving that.
That's the biggest thing, right? We love our champions wrestling on Dynamite. So, all right,
if you're gonna make these guys champions, that you don't want them sitting for 3 months without a title defense.
You're saying you don't want to do the Lucha Bros?
This is not the this is not the championship reign to do that.
You don't want to be the Lucha Bros? Is that what you're saying? Okay. Anyway, yeah. No offense, I don't even
or every trio's champion.
Like our currents. Anyway, no offense, Samoa Joe. You kicked my ass, but come on, bro. Come on, big bro, defend. Anyway, you know,
defend, coward!
Okada's backstage, and he says he's the top dog in the Don Callis family, and Takeshita just needs to learn to live with that, bitch. The Hurt Syndicate say, I missed something. I need to go back. I don't know how I didn't write this down. There was a fucking diabolical Ricochet segment at one point. My bad. All right, we're going to roll back. All right, I'm going to spend that much time on it, but Ricochet Basically, like, all right, I'm actually going to give this a little bit of time. Okay, I accidentally skipped over this. So Ricochet said he doesn't like the Hurt Syndicate. They're washed. I loved what Khan and Toa even had to say here. I forgot Toa can cut a promo because they never let him speak, you know, like, but I remember that from Ring of Honor now. I was like, oh yeah, they both were great, cutting great shit over. That's why I liked them so much. Anyway, so yeah, really phenomenal backstage stuff. They set up a challenge for Toronto for All Out. So I just thought that was really good backstage stuff. This story is fucking great so far. So I'm really glad that I went back and talked about that because the Hurt Syndicate basically say Ricochet's bitch made bald and they little broed him, you know? They compared themselves to fucking lions because lions on the, I gotta get this line right, lions on the Serengeti because they command respect. And what he means by that is you don't go out into the fucking Serengeti and then you not give a wide berth to a lion because you respect that thing will fucking kill you if you mess with it, you know? What a fucking line from MVP. This guy is the fucking goat, man. Like, just unbelievable stuff. Cope and Christian were going to come out and say something to the crowd, but then FTR brawled them up and, you know, Adam Priest, was part of the crowd of bodies, that was, you know, there. And, he got pissed when, I don't forget what Dax did, but he was just pissed cause he was trying to get past him and he just started beating his ass. So, I guess they're trying to make something out of Adam Priest, which I think is pretty cool. Maybe the workhorsemen are finally getting their due. It's possible.
good decision.
Yep, John Moxley and Daniel Garcia had a video package here. FTR and Big Stoke were backstage. They had someone find Adam Priest, and Cash, just the fucking menacing Cash here was so great. I love how much they've been having Cash do lately, too, because it reminds you, again, how great he is on the mic, even though he usually is not the one doing all the talking, you know? He grabs him by the fucking back of the neck. He says, "You've been on TV 1 week, and you think you're somebody? Go find a tag partner. I'll make you somebody." Fucking aura, dude. Unbelievable. You know what I mean? Like, fucking it all
was,
he said
it's,
was...
It's a perfect segment, and it worked so well for fucking Dax to do it.
Oh, my God. Just such good stuff. I gotta give credit for what it's due, you know? It's so good. And then we had an all-star eight-man tag match, and that took us to the end of Dynamite. That'll take us to Collision, bitch.
Yes, 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 indeed. Okay, so we open up Collision from the 2300 Arena.
Hello, what have we here?
With John Moxley versus Daniel Garcia. So, this has been a really fun story. It's been, I believe, that they've been planting the seeds for Daniel to join him. So, that's just the way it feels. So we get to the match. He wants it one more time.
I think it's more like I can't think of another way out of the story. I think you kind of maybe booked yourself into a little bit of a corner where now you kind of have to try it and see what you do because maybe that's a good thing in wrestling sometimes. Maybe you want
they haven't done it.
Something different. You know, I mean, and there's the history with him and Wheeler on the indies. You know what I mean? That you can play into. You know, there's options. You know what I mean? Like,
well, there's also where this company wants Wheeler and Daniel to be in the future. Like that is a big thing here. They clearly want them in a big spot in the future.
All I'm going to say is I've made the joke a million times, and when former pillars collide, the foundation is rocked. That's all I'm going to say, you know, like.
Goddamn right. And I thought this was a really good match out of Daniel. I thought Moxley did everything in his power to show that Daniel Garcia is on par with him, dare I say. Dare I say, and John Moxley won this match, right? But the way the match played out in front of us, it felt like, and I don't know if this is the story they're going for. I don't know if this was all John or all Danny or whatever. It felt like they were positioning this story and showing us that Daniel Garcia is better than John. And it felt like that was the story the match was trying to portray to us. And there's so many examples during the match of this happening that it just, I totally could have been reading too much into it. And they were really just trying to make it seem like Daniel was one click away from beating him. Maybe that was the whole intention. I don't think that's something John Moxley does. When John Moxley beat the shit out of Wheeler Yuta and bloodied him in that Rampage match that made Wheeler Yuta become a member of the Blackpool Combat Club, I think this was, in a way, a take on that. But what they were trying to get over for us was Moxley knows when it comes to the in-ring technician shit, Danny's better than him. And I think that's what they tried to pursue. And Moxley, in a way, was using this match as, you know, a method of teaching him there's more to this than that. So, you know, and that's why he pinned him the way he did, right? Duke, I don't know. It felt like, in a way, Moxley was trying to teach this guy.
Sort of with the idea that we have of what the, like, sort of, like, so if we go off of all the story, right? Like, the first story was Blackpool Combat Club. We're the best fighters in the world. We are the best, you know, Moxley's the best brawler. Wheeler's the best, Wheeler's the young gun.
Wheeler's the potential that it could be the best at something.
Yeah, right. He's the one that's going to take all the knowledge. But then you have the big, giant powerhouse in Claudio, obviously the big, strong man. And then you have Danielson, the technical wizard, right? So, and supposedly all those go into Wheeler and make him into the ultimate wrestler or whatever, right? So, well, then there was this evolution when the Death Riders came around. If you remember, right before Moxley did this, he started doing the whole, I forget what it's called, but, like, is it Death Jitsu, whatever the thing that he does is or whatever?
Yep.
Like
Death Jitsu, yep.
And it's like his whole new martial art that he's making or whatever. And so if that's the evolution of the Blackpool Combat Club fighting style, like the next level up, and Danielson's body wasn't able to keep up, so they had to execute him type beat, you know, like, then maybe that's what they're going with Danny, is they want to introduce, like, hey, you're the best technical, like, young gun that we could possibly have, but look at what we've done for Wheeler. We turned him into a guy that can win stuff now. You know what I mean? Like, kind of that.
And Moxley knows that.
Is that then you take it a step further and you have to bait him into joining by having him beat Moxley? And maybe Moxley doesn't let him win, but he knows if we just keep pushing him and pushing him, he will eventually beat him.
Here's the thing, too. I think in the way this match was portrayed, I think Moxley knew he was going to beat him. And that's why he was trying to show the new dog some tricks, if you will, right? And how he pinned him. And was just taking advantage of his own, you know, because he knew Danny wasn't gonna try and get a little cheeky with it. But Zack Sabre Jr. would, right? Bryan Danielson would. And most importantly for this story, Jon Moxley would. So, you know, I think there's something to this. And the post-match, when he shoves away Daddy Magic and he tells Shivani that he's tired of having a tremendous match, but still losing. He keeps getting back up. 5 years, a good 5 years, just isn't good enough. I think that's my gut on what they're trying to tell us is Danny knows he's great. The ace of the company knows he's great. But he's just missing something.
Is Jon Moxley going to steal my story of the year again? Is he going to do it?
I think so, because I think the seeds are planted here to... There's so many ways you can do this. There's so many ways. And maybe we mentioned this story once a month, but we got to fucking bring it up. It fits. And then I'm gonna fly through the rest of the show. But whenever whoever takes over the Combat Club, right? Or the Death Riders, whatever it is now, whoever usurps the throne, it's always been Wheeler for 4 years. I mean, if you put Danny in this thing, I don't think Pac's usurping the throne. It's definitely not Claudio. It's definitely not Marina. I mean, dude.
Oh my God, Wheeler and him team up for one night to kill Moxley, but then they have a battle for the throne.
You could position yourself to where Danny becomes the leader. Now, this is getting 18,000 steps ahead. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying, I'm trying to think long game, you know, 3 years down the road here, if this goes the way they think it does. Because again, I think they've tried multiple times, and the Jericho Appreciation Society was a perfect example. They're really trying.
Oh my
to do
God!
Something
I know how you play this too. Do you remember how they played it before, where they didn't quite really trust Wheeler with the information? And dude, this is how you build the tension. Claudio starts to slowly like Danny as he's kind of flirting with joining the group, and he starts leaning in. He's like, "No, Wheeler, you have to trust this guy. I know you guys have history, but you just have to trust us." And Wheeler's still not buying it. It's this, and Wheeler can still be the same, like. You know what I mean? Like, that's sort of asshole. That's still, like, even going all the way back to his time with freaking Orange Cassidy, where he didn't quite trust his friends. You know what I mean? Like,
and Moxley could also use this against Wheeler, talking about how he's a little distracted right now with Chris Statlander. So Wheeler's trying to recruit members too to eventually usurp this throne. Like, he's doing his work. Maybe Moxley's got a backup plan, just like his boy Seth. So, all right. We had to spend some time on that because it was fucking unreal. Recap of Kyle Fletcher good shit. Big Bill backstage talking about rock bottom. Don't know if this is the venue. Don't know if this is the place to do it. I don't think the crowd reacted the way he wanted to. I don't know. Here nor there, he got the chance to put this promo out, and I'm glad he did. He then calls out Eddie Kingston. Duke, the return on the horizon? Must be, right?
I mean, they said the guy's name. He probably should be back next week, right?
Do you save him, or do you save him for All Out?
I guess it depends on if you're wanting to run Eddie versus, if it's going to be a TV match between these two, or if it's going to be Eddie versus, if you're going to do it on the pay-per-view, I say you bring him back next week. You know what I mean? Like, fuck it.
Yeah. Yeah. Get Big Bill solo match on the pay-per-view.
Like, maybe there was a question of whether Eddie was going to be physically ready for the pay-per-view. You know what I mean? Like, and they were like, well, if you're good to go, we'll give you the match with Big Bill. If not, we'll run it like the next week on Dynamite or something like that. And you'll show up at the show and we'll give Big Bill a match on like the pre-show and you can beat his ass after.
FTR versus Adam Priest and Tommy Billington. This felt like hand-picked guys from FTR. Just a fun fucking match.
How unfortunate that we couldn't get the Gabe Kidd Eddie Kingston AEW match, because we totally would have had that match if Eddie was around, right? Like,
it would have been great. Dax hits a Hanson Lariat on Adam Priest. FTR hits stereo German suplexes on Billington and Priest. 2 count. Those guys go for the roll-up. FTR get back up, hard strikes, power and glory on Priest for the near fall, for the pinfall. I loved it. Loved it.
Love Billington to that spot.
Great, yep. Great vibe of the show, too. I mean, when you got John Moxley going with these young guy, with his young guy, and then you got FTR and Cash, or just FTR in general, doing this for Tommy Billington again. And clearly one of their friends, Adam Priest, who also was, I mean, he's not even 30 yet, so clearly another young wrestler.
Yeah, I forget Adam Priest is like right in that range where if we wanted to pull the trigger on this guy, we still have the opportunity, and they might just be doing that. They might bring him and the Workhorsemen up, and the Workhorsemen get their like little end of the year, end of their careers sort of, you know, end, like they're in their 40s, you know, like tag run, you know, and he can obviously, you know, whatever.
Sometimes you just got to warm these guys up on the television audience. So, you know, and that seems to be what they're doing here with Priest. Again, fun little 1 week story from Dynamite to this. I love that shit. I get it. Hook, line, and sinker. I love that shit.
We can honestly do more of it sometimes in AEW. Yeah. I mean, I love the connectivity, one-week stories. But these 1 week things that are intersecting with your other stories, you could bring Adam Priest back a month from now and we'd be like, hey, I remember that guy. He fought FTR. That guy was pretty good, you know? Like,
I mean, how long has it been since we saw Tommy? And we still remember that. So, yeah. They blame Cope and Cage. And not too much this week with those guys. More next week for sure. It was that more shit on Dynamite and all that. So we get an ad. Turbo Floyd, Truth Magnum, hanging out in Brother Nature. They hear a cry of the peacock. They find the boys in Dalton Castle.
I have never wanted a combination more in my life.
This is a trio that works. Let's fucking go. Also, really high production value from this one for compared to the other shit. Good on them.
It was probably shot in a similar way. They just, you know, they went in afterward to make it look like 80s, you know, and they wanted to do like the vibe. It looked good. Looked I also great. Loved that they were like in Vietnam in this one. Like,
it totally worked. Let this trio sing, literally. Let them do their thing. Good to see Dalton back from injury.
Yeah, it's another one that always, right when they're, I'm praying to the wrestling gods that the only one that happens to is Wardlow, because Dalton's another one that every time they do something fucking cool with him, it fucking hurts. It gets hurt, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, I'm hoping for the best here, you know?
And hopefully this means he's on AEW now, going forward. We have a Jon Moxley promo. You've all seen it before. Good women's match that you covered. Ace Austin hype video. Awesome, showing the stuff with Chris Bay. I expect to see Ace Austin next week. Juice and Austin, they don't know what to do. They're trying to figure out what's next. They put away Card Blade and Card.
I know you kind of skipped past it. I do want to say about that Moxley promo. I do think that is one of his better promos recently. I liked the content of that one where he's talking about like, what do I have that everybody thinks that they want? You know, like that I thought was good. But I mean, it did get away from him like they all do. But I didn't hate that one as much as I do like.
He meandered with it again. It's got to be a little focus in, Mox. But you know, that makes it feel natural, right? So Ace Austin video package followed immediately by Juice and Austin. They need to take this seriously and they're trying to figure out what's next.
Is there a connection there? ? Former Bullet Club member? ? Yeah.
Again, that pairing, it made sense the day Austin joined. They haven't intersected at all. It's been the word of the day for me. So, who knows? We'll see. Recap of Riho. Really, really solid Kyle Fletcher stuff here, where talking about how, or not Kyle Fletcher, apologies, Josh Alexander. And they gave him the mic, and he just went nuts talking about his grudge match. Good promo time, good in-ring mic time. They definitely, without a doubt, heard the complaints from everyone. You will never change my mind.
You can't hype up a guy as one of your top four signings of the year and then, like, not fucking do anything with him.
Yeah,
like,
they 1,000,000,000% heard the complaints.
This is the top guy in TNA. I'm sorry.
This is not a coincidence signing. This is a coincidence fucking turn of the page, without a doubt. Good stuff here. Fletcher seems focused going after Hangman. More chicanery with O'Reilly, Strong, and Hologram. We'll follow up on that next week. Anthony Bowen's heel stuff.
Okay, can we just pull the trigger on that already? I'm cool for Roddy to be a heel again. Let's rock.
Yeah, I mean, like, it would suck.
Him and Kyle are going to fuck. They did the last time they wrestled. I'll tell you what.
I'd rather Kyle O'Reilly is a heel, and they're both heel. And the Paragon is the heel group.
Like, it just doesn't seem that's what they... Kyle is just having a blast, it seems like. So I don't know. Oh, do you think we're going to get Kyle versus Ishii, though, when Ishii...
Maybe that's the red herring. Exactly. What happens when one of the conglomeration turns on their brother?
That's just...
I'd love to see it. Lexi with Matt Anthony Bowens. He's running down the list of media he's doing. That Conjuring movie made a fuckload of money. We'll probably talk about that on our fantasy show.
$80 million.
And then Jerry Lynn walks in.
Ever made.
Yeah, Jerry Lynn walks in. Just whatever. Look in the mirror to find what's missing. I like using Jerry Lynn like that. And a great Takeshita versus Briscoe match. So, which ends with MJF. He's the reason Takeshita wins. Incredible match. Probably could have been one of our favorites completely. You know, it's just pick your... There's six different matches, Charlie. We could have picked. So
I easily.
I
have to ask you a question. So we have a pay-per-view that's on the horizon where we bring in Japanese talent and Japanese titles sometimes. And we have a chance for Takeshita to win his first New Japan World Championship before that date comes up. And MJF teased a match with Takeshita at the end of this too. Are we going to be doing an IWGP World Championship match between Takeshita and MJF at WrestleDream?
I'd be down. I'd love it. I'd be totally down.
If that's what we're teasing up here, holy fucking shit.
Yeah, holy shit would be indeed. So they make that match official for All Out. Moxley versus Darby Allin was made the coffin match. Riho versus Mercedes. Hurt Syndicate versus Ricochet and GOA. Cope versus FTR. Cope and Cage versus FTR. What do they call themselves? CNC?
Yeah, and then it works.
Yeah, it works. Tony at Edge loves his fucking acronyms. Edge, Jesus. Tony, Hater, Stat, Tekla, 4-way. 6 official matches for All Out. Still 2 weeks to go. We will be back next week where we'll be talking some more AEW. And yeah, guys, thank you so much for hanging out with us this week. If there's anything that is on your mind about these shows, any questions you want to throw at us, any thoughts you had on anything we talked about, I'd love to know what people's thoughts are on the Daniel Garcia story, for example. So,
that's something you could easily be reading completely opposite everybody. Totally. Else. There's people that I guarantee hate it because they love Danny, but they don't love the Death Riders thing, and they're like, get him away from this. So I'm curious if that's what you're thinking. Let us know. We won't judge you for it. We can have that conversation. It's a valid thing, you know. So
on Spotify, you can write in the podcast comment section and we will read it next week, or you can write to us on Blue Sky at Bane Duke at O'Charlie with an X instead of an A. It's in the description of this podcast. Thank you very much. And if we hear from you, we'll talk to you next week and we'll catch you guys on the flip side.
War Dog down!
Screen storage captain, and I do not have a catchphrase.
You.
Go fuck yourself. Yeah. I'm a sports entertainer.
Skiba the Scuba.